You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Casey, and I'll be joined today by frequent co-host Dennis. Our topic is careers. Maybe you're thinking about a second career or even an encore career after you retire. Or maybe you're just approached for career advice often by family, friends, neighbors, or coworkers. This will be of interest to you today. Our guest is Mark Hirschberg. He's the author of The Career Toolkit, and he brings a fascinating background to our conversation. Here's a little bit on Mark. From tracking criminals and terrorists on the dark web to creating marketplaces and new authentication systems, Mark has spent his career launching and developing new ventures at startups and Fortune 500s and in academia. He helped start MIT's Career Success Accelerator, where he teaches annually. At MIT, he received a BS in physics, a BS in electrical engineering and computer science, and a master's in electrical engineering and computer science, focusing on cryptography. At Harvard Business School, Mark helped create a platform used to teach finance at prominent business schools. He also works with many nonprofits, including Techie Youth and Plant a Million Corals. He was one of the top-ranked ballroom dancers in the country and now lives in New York City, where he is known for his social gatherings, including his annual Halloween party, as well as his diverse cufflink collection. Mark, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So our listeners have just heard your bio, and it's clear that you've done and are still doing a number of fascinating things. What led you to create the Career Toolkit?
What I've seen throughout my career, throughout teaching for two decades at MIT and other universities, and hiring, mentoring, and managing hundreds of people, is so many people have the capability to succeed, but they are missing a few key elements. They've got the mechanical skills, they know their domain, but they never really came to grasp leadership, communication, team building, how to interview effectively, all these important skills that we've been hearing about since we were young. In fact, let's take networking. That's something we've all heard for decades. But if you think about it, no one ever sat us down and taught us how to do it. And so many people have these gaps in their skill sets that's holding them back. And for people throughout the stages of their career, from a new college grad to people in the later stages of their career, being able to help them develop these skills makes them so much more effective and helps them move faster, whether they're looking at 5 years or 50 years in their career.
Many of our listeners are interested in second careers or encore careers after they retire from full-time work. This is probably the third or fourth recession many have experienced, and that leads to some displacement. So some are retiring on their own. Some are retiring because someone else has decided it for them. What's your advice for those seeking to switch careers and forge a new path in their mid to late career?
This is my third recession, and I'm only mid-career, so I very much see and understand what they're going through. In fact, during the Great Recession, I helped teach at a program sponsored by New York's Economic Development Council, in which we were taking people who lost not simply their job, but their career. Their entire career was getting displaced and not coming back post-recession. And New York said to us, we can't have them sitting on the sidelines. These are capable people. How do we get them back to work? What we did is we looked at where the jobs were being created and the nature of those jobs. Typically, the people being displaced were coming from large corporations. So certainly coming out of 2008, 2009, lots of financial services, lots of big companies where you had multiple layers of bureaucracy. The jobs being created were in tiny companies, in startups, were in companies less than 50 people, sometimes less than 20 people. The biggest change was trying to get people to see those jobs and feel comfortable in those jobs. it wasn't so much a domain skill challenge. It's not that, oh, marketing is that different in these companies. Yeah, there was a little bit of, well, they're doing a little more social media marketing than traditional marketing you might have done at a big corporation. But those skills are easy to pick up. The biggest challenge, it's first, again, recognizing, look in a non-traditional place. If you've been big corporations your whole life, look at these small companies and then recognize that cultural difference. So if you're in a big company of 30,000 people, you're used to having the pre-meeting to plan the meeting, to coordinate the meeting, for the meeting, to discuss something. So at 6 months later, a decision's made. When you're at these tiny 20-person startups and you say, hey, I have an idea. So you turn around in your chair and you're talking to the boss who's sitting 3 feet from you in another chair because there's no offices here. And you say, I have an idea. Why don't we do this? And the boss says, okay, that sounds great. Well, that was the meeting. Those were the 6 months condensed to a 6-minute conversation. And understanding these cultural differences, how the businesses operate, that you can move fast and break things, which is very different from these big traditional corporations, that was the biggest challenge. And so to people who are saying, I need to find something different, it's not just the same job with a different company, look at different types of companies and understand it's not just going to be the mechanics of the role, but understand the cultural differences. And if you can set yourself up to succeed in that, both recognizing how you'll operate, but also how you sell yourself into working in those networks, in those types of organizations and cultures, then you can have a very successful career and find a lot of opportunities.
So the world of work continues to evolve. And I noticed that you don't use the term soft skills, but you talk about another term. What are the firm skills that are key to succeeding today going forward?
Many people do call them soft skills or power skills. We like the term firm skills just because it's a great play on words. It's not quite as solid as the hard skills of math and science. It's a little more solid than the sometimes ephemeral list of firm skills that keeps getting longer every year. And of course, it's got that play on words being corporate. Now, the skills that I cover in the book, these aren't just, this is what Mark woke up and thought of one morning. This comes from feedback that we've got at MIT and feedback given to many other universities about what skills corporate America is looking for, but that they're not finding. So the skills I break down, 10 different skills. The first is how to create a career plan, to forge forward and have a plan for your own success. Second, working effectively. This is a broad category, managing your manager, understanding corporate culture, dealing with corporate politics, learning how you deliver value to your team, your company, your customers. Third is interviewing. Interviewing, there's lots of support out there for how to be a candidate. Unfortunately, very few people talk about how to hire. And so many people, I've met many senior execs at big companies you've heard of, and they've said, yeah, no one ever sat me down and taught me how to hire someone. And they just kind of figured it out on their own. And sometimes it works, sometimes not. We know there are great chefs who went to culinary school. Occasionally you get chefs who learned maybe at their mother's apron, but generally those are fewer and far between. You want the chefs who had some type of training. Same thing for the people who are on the other side of interviewing. And as a candidate, if we know how they're thinking, if we know what they're looking for and how they're analyzing us, we are so much more effective as candidates. The second part of the book breaks down leadership and management. And I really get into the fundamentals and focus on management of people and management as process, because they are separate types of management skills. And then the third section, 4 fundamental skills: communication, negotiation, networking, and ethics. And these, again, are what corporate America has said we want to see, but we're having trouble finding.
So you mentioned planning. And one thing I noticed is that whether it's financial planning, planning for retirement, or career planning, which you're talking about, people often procrastinate about planning. That word tends to put people in a certain state and stops them in their tracks. And with the pandemic, I've heard some people say, wait a minute, why should I even plan? Because we don't really know what's going to happen. But you see a career plan as something that's not a one and done. You keep revising it as things evolve. What do you see people get from the process of planning?
Eisenhower famously said, plans are worthless, but planning is everything. And we have to recognize a career plan is not simply a plan you make and now you're stuck to it forevermore. All of us in our jobs have been planning. If you think about any project you've worked on, could you ever have gone to your boss and said, hey, listen, boss, I know we're going to work on this for 6 months. We're not going to bother with a project plan or a budget. We're just going to kind of wing it. That sound good to you? Of course, your boss is going to say, no way. You have to create a plan. I want to know where this is going. What are the risks? What are the opportunities? How might this unfold? Now, we also know when you're doing this 6 month project or year long or however long project, it's never going to work exactly as you expected. Things go over budget, over time. Something was harder. Occasionally, something's easier. But when you have that plan, you can start to say, well, we're going to now vary the plan. We're going to update the plan. We're off the plan. But maybe that's a good thing because we realize that plan was wrong. But you created that plan in the first place. Your career is a lot bigger than a six-month project. You need to create that plan. But much like the plans we have for our projects, you're not set in stone. If it's not working, you can throw it out. You can create a new plan. And the act of planning itself, of thinking about what are the risks, what are the opportunities, what are the things I need to focus on, what are the areas that are less important. Now, as things change, now as things come up, you've thought through it. And so suddenly you can recognize the opportunities and capitalize on them better or minimize the risks as you go along. Even if you spend just a few hours a year planning, put a note once a quarter, sit down for 30 or 60 minutes, put this note in your calendar and say, I'm just going to think about my job. Where do I want to be in a year, 2 years, 5 years? What do those steps look like? And what's it going to take for me to get there? You are already worlds ahead of so many other people who put no time into planning.
What would you say is the best way for people to get more comfortable with these firm skills? So we've just talked about the firm skills, how important they are, and the fact that companies are saying they're just not seeing them. So what advice do you give people that are out there trying to figure out, how do I close these gaps?
Great question. You yourself have to take responsibility for them because you didn't get it in college. You're not getting it from your companies. You have to take ownership. Now, here's the thing about these skills. They are different from the other type of learning that we've done. For most of us, when we're working as an accountant and new accounting regulations come in, we go to a seminar, read a blog, listen to a podcast, say, okay, now I'm updated. In my world, technology, there's always new technologies coming out. Same thing. I am just getting that new knowledge. What's the tool? What's the rule? What's the skill set? And just adding it to my corpus of knowledge. These skills are different. There is no three-step process to leadership. There's no simple formula for networking. So you can't just say, I have to learn one, two, three new things and I'm done. In fact, the way we learn these skills, it's the way we've been teaching them at MIT. It's the way top business schools have been teaching them for decades. It's creating a peer learning group. So what you want to do is create a group. You can do so with people at the company you're at, or you can create a local group on your own, create a meetup group, create a group through professional networks that you're part of. Create these small groups and say, we are going to come together and discuss these topics. You'll start with a source. And yes, you can use my book for this, but take any other book that you like, any other business book, take great podcasts like this one or articles you're reading and say, we're all going to read this and then we're going to discuss it. And when you have that discussion of a chapter in a book, of a recent podcast episode, you're going to talk about it and you're going to hear different perspectives. And this is the key because there's no magical way to communicate. There's six different ways off the top of your head, and there's probably 20 others you're not thinking of. As you talk about this, you're going to say, wow, I never thought of approaching that communication challenge this way. That's really interesting. And you enrich your understanding. So by having these discussions, you're going to open up your understanding of the skills, and that's going to create the opportunity to identify where you can apply them to develop the skill on your daily or weekly basis in your company or without. So create these peer learning groups, read books and listen to podcasts together, and then discuss them. And that is the best way to pick up these firm skills.
I love the peer group, and this is so actionable and practical. I appreciate you going into that a little more. Thank you.
And on the website, on the resources page, I've got a free download for how you can create such a group What are the things to think through? If you want to do this within your organization, whether that's a company or other group, you can just download that and build your own peer learning process.
Perfect. Thanks.
So Mark, as you mentioned, a lot of the book is based on research that you've done. It's based on your experience as well. You've done a lot of cutting edge work in technology. But there was a time before you had gone to MIT, and I know I read somewhere that you were interested in physics from the age of 9, something we don't have in common. I came to it much later, like a week ago. But going back in historically, I'm curious about one source of learning for you. What did Legos teach you about career planning?
In my career, I was interested in physics, and then I started off in computer science. And I started my career as a software engineer. I loved programming. It was so much fun. And programming was a lot like Legos. You're taking these little primitives, the elements of software, or the basic blocks of Legos, and you're putting it together, and you're creating something bigger. And I loved programming, just like I loved Legos as a kid. But at a certain point, I was feeling a little stagnant, and I was trying to figure out why. And I thought back to Legos. Now, Legos, I still love Legos. There's a couple of them in my apartment, but honestly, I don't spend a lot of time playing with them. And if you think back to when you played with Legos, you sat there, and in my case, I would build a spaceship, and then I'd fly the spaceship around the room and have adventures. And I'd keep the spaceship for about a week or so, and I'd take it apart, I'd build a new spaceship, and I'd have more adventures. By the time I was on spaceship number 62, that was a lot like spaceship number 61, 60, and many of the other prior ones. And the adventures were a lot like the prior adventures. And if you think about most of the toys we play with as kids, at a certain point we say, you know, this was fun, but I'm developing, I want different experiences, different fun, different types of activities. And so that's why I shift away from Legos. That's why most of us did. We started to engage in different activities that we found more valuable. I still love software development. I still love putting code together and saying, look, I did that. See what appeared there? I made that. But I really like even more the challenges that I get from being a manager, an executive, from leading, from dealing with people. And so I've stayed in technology because I can still kind of play with Legos a little bit, but I really wanted these other challenges. And so for all of us in our careers, we need to think about the challenges that we're getting in our jobs. Hopefully it's a job you enjoy and you say, I like these challenges. But if you're finding it's getting redundant and repetitive, think about the way you thought about your toys and say, what is it? Why am I not playing with this toy anymore? Why am I not excited by this job? What toy, what new job or responsibility would be more fun? And transition your career to start getting more of what you want.
You mentioned networking before, Mark. What have you learned about networking in your career?
Networking, first, we're never taught how to network, as I mentioned before. Literally, think back. You've heard it many times. You need to learn to network. No one ever sat you down and taught you how to do it. And so, unfortunately, 99% of people do it wrong. And it's been made worse by tools like LinkedIn and other social media, where people think the right metric is the number of people in their network. And so they just start connecting to everyone. Now, it's certainly true you want a large network. You'd also like a broad network. Too many people think, well, I'm in medicine, so I only need to know people in medicine. In fact, you want to meet people in other areas because the diversity it adds into your network leads to new opportunities that you might not have gotten otherwise. Because remember, when you're connected to someone, you're connected to everyone they know. And you never know when you need to get into a new area where you don't have yourself a deep bench. Or maybe it just turns out this person, their cousin happens to also be in medicine, and it circles back to how it can help you. But the biggest mistake people make is they just think, well, I'm just going to add connections, and they don't foster that relationship. I always talk about how adding someone on LinkedIn and saying that they are now in your network, it's like swiping right on Tinder and saying, this person's now your significant other. We all know you can't just swipe right and say, poof, now I have a girlfriend, now I have a wife, right? You have to build that relationship. And the same is true for our professional relationships. So that instant connection, that getting the business card or adding on LinkedIn, that's step one, that's a swipe right. What you want to do is invest in building that relationship. Now, you may not have done that in the past, but you can start doing that today. And it doesn't take that long, even a few months of starting to build up that relationship. Now that network is warmed up. So when you need help down the road, whether finding a job, finding a candidate, finding a supplier, a partner, just getting information, that network has been warmed up and now you can go to it and you're not reaching out to someone you haven't talked to in 20 years. It's someone you last spoke to 3 months ago. So start today, reach back out to people. It's a great time now as we're getting out of the pandemic. Reach out and say, hey, glad we're getting through this. How are you doing? What's coming up for you? How can I be of help? And even if you're not working, even if you don't have a job, we can all be of help to other people. So reach out, connect, say, how have you been? What are you looking forward to? How can I be helpful to you? And warm up those networks.
Great advice. Appreciate that. Mark, I was wondering if I could ask you two things about your bio.
Absolutely.
So the first one was, could you tell us about the Plant a Million Corals Project?
This is a wonderful nonprofit started by Dr. David Vaughn and his wife, Donna Vaughn. David is an expert at growing coral, and he found a way to fast grow coral. He was getting close to retirement, and a number of us, we met him at a conference and said, if you know how to grow coral, we need your help. The world needs your help. You know this. You need to start a nonprofit and help to repopulate the world's coral population. And David said to us, well, look, I'm a scientist. He jokes. He wears sandals every day. He doesn't wear closed-toed shoes. He lives down in Key West. So he's not a business guy. He's the first to admit that. He said, I really don't know how to do this. We said, well, that's okay. We don't know how to grow coral, but we know the business side of it. We know financing and legal and marketing, and we can help you with all this piece, but we need your expertise to do this. So we talked him in just as he was about to retire. We talked him into starting up this nonprofit. And so we got started up. Now, we started right before the pandemic. So it was a bad time to start, especially since we partner a lot with the travel industry, but things should be resuming soon, we hope. And if we pull it off, we will help repopulate the world's coral population, which is a key piece of the ocean ecosystem. And hopefully we can reverse some of the damage that we've done to the world's oceans.
Well, terrific. Appreciate that. And the last one, when you're by the, curious about asking just some background, I've talked about this in the podcast before, but as someone who was sent back to remedial ballroom dancing class, I have to ask you, how did you get involved in competitive ballroom dancing?
The short version of the story, I was at MIT and had just started dating a girl. Thought, okay, well, what's a good thing for us to do? Now, MIT happens to have one of the oldest and largest ballroom clubs and ballroom teams in the country. And in fact, we were arguably the number one ballroom dance team back in the 90s and early 2000s. It was between us and I think BYU could argue that title as well. There wasn't a national head-to-head, so you can't really measure. It's not an NCAA sport. So I started doing ballroom dancing with this woman I had just started dating. We did a couple different classes. MIT has open classes during a January session. We didn't last very long, but I kept up social dancing, met another woman who became my girlfriend. She decided she wanted to compete in ballroom dancing, which apparently meant I also decided I wanted to compete in ballroom dancing. And even though that was not my choice per se, I am so glad she got me to do it because ballroom dancing was wonderful as a social activity, as an athletic activity, building my confidence. I always say my public speaking improved because of my ballroom dancing. And then, of course, even growing my network. Because the great thing about ballroom dancing, you meet people from all different backgrounds and professions. And so it brings in that diversity we talked about before. So I'm so glad she got me into competitive ballroom dancing because it was one of the best times of my life.
So thanks for sharing the story. Great to hear.
Absolutely. I love the way it actually added to other parts of your life that you weren't even aware of. And people don't realize that sometimes, right?
This is how we should look at everything in our life. Our jobs, our hobbies, our religious groups, our family, all of them can be used to help support us in different aspects of our life. And when you look at it this way, you suddenly find you have a lot more resources for any of the challenges you're undertaking.
So Mark, finally, I was wondering if you could tell us about the companion app for the Career Toolkit, because that stood out to me as something pretty unique.
this is something I think, I certainly hope, we're going to see a lot more of going forward. Whenever you read a book like this, you say, okay, wow, great advice, fantastic. You finish the book, and then what happens? You've got your job, your family, other books, and it quickly fades into the background. That's not very useful. The book isn't there just to be bought. The book is there to help you. The other challenge, of course, is when you're at a networking event or about to negotiate a job offer, you might not have the book with you. You're probably not carrying that around to the networking event. So we need to get the content in our books in your hands where and when you need it. To do so, I create an app. It's a free app. You can download, put on your phone. You don't even have to open it. Each day, it's going to pop up a tip. So if you went through the book with a highlighter, said, oh, this is an important point. This is what I need to remember. That is what is in the app. And each day, it's going to pop it up on your phone. It's like a daily affirmation, but with content from the book. And you look at it, go, right, good piece of advice. Swipe it away. You're done. Or if you do go to one of these events and you say, oh, I'm about to go to a networking event, open up the app, scan through the tips, and just get that quick refresher so that it's there when and where you need it. You can download the app. It's on the Android and Apple stores. You can go to the website, thecareertoolkitbook.com, and you'll find links to the stores. You'll also find more information about the book, how to contact me, a resource page with a lot of other great book recommendations, other websites and resources, and also how to download that form, that document that's going to explain how you can create these peer reading groups. All of this, the free app, the guides, more information about the book on thecareertoolkitbook.com.
Mark, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today. Great conversation.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure being here.
Great conversation with Mark Hirschberg. Dennis, what are your takeaways from our conversation today?
I have a couple of things. When we asked him about the advice for those seeking to switch careers and forge a new path in their lives, he said the biggest change or challenge people have is feeling comfortable in the opportunities relating to jobs that are in smaller companies, because they're used to coming from bigger companies or bigger corporations. They have to get comfortable with that cultural difference. And he said, two aspects of that. There's the operating in that environment and selling yourself in that environment. And I thought those were very important points to focus on. The second thing that he mentioned was when we were talking about the firm skills, I had asked him specifically about how do people go about getting more knowledge and closing the gaps they have when it comes to these firm skills. And I thought his recommendations were great. He mentioned peer groups. He mentioned reading. He mentioned podcasts. He mentioned the fact that it's just moving yourself forward and learning more as much as you can and getting these experiences in place. And I specifically like the peer group thing a lot. It doesn't have to be 20, 30 people. It can start with a small group, but you got to start somewhere. So Mark was a proponent of starting something, starting it, moving forward. So those are the two big things that I took away. Joe, what about yourself?
I would highlight two others. Those are great ones. The two that jumped out to me that people should consider is perspective on planning. And I think what I notice is when people I work with first encounter the word planning, they freeze for a minute because I think they're thinking about the output, an actual plan. But I think he's made the points in some other places as well that I've seen with him that the process itself has a lot of benefits. And what I see is it forces you to reflect, step back, and really prioritize and make some choices to then test and experiment with. So I think just the process, not the output, is worth considering and testing. Second one, he talked a lot about networking. And we've had other great guests come in and talk about networking. And he made a similar point to Kelly Hoey, who we had a great conversation with recently, about looking at the breadth of your network. But he also cautions, don't focus just on the numbers, the metrics, really measure by how useful you could be to your network and vice versa. So I thought that was good advice. And my last comment is really just about the book itself, having read it. I think it's very good for different generations. Obviously, most of the people listening to this podcast are interested in a mid-career shift or an encore career after their full-time primary career comes to an end. But I think it's also good for those of you who are parents like we are, who may have children graduating, or it makes a great graduation gift, or children who may be mid-career and considering investing in their career growth. So think about it from different points of view. It can be useful for you. It can be useful for others who you know. Thank you for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. Our mission is to help people retire smarter by balancing their planning with the non-financial side of life in retirement.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.